Good morning, colleagues. After a short intermission, we are continuing in advance of the general shareholders meeting. The topic of today's press conference, improving the reliability of the supply of gas to Europe, attended by Elena Burmistrova, who is the head of the Gazprom export, Sergei Ivanovich Kuznets, head of the department, and Pavel Orderov, also head of the department. Let me pass the floor over to Elena Viktorovna, and we will switch to the Q&A. Dear colleagues, good morning, and thank you for having found time to join us at the TASS News Agency in St. Petersburg. I would like to organize our meetings in the following way. To first do a bit of an introduction, and following this, together with my colleagues who have been introduced, we will be happy to respond to your questions. So, dear colleagues, in the first place, I am very happy that the export activities by Gazprom do raise so much of an interest on the part of the meeting. So before I switch over to the subject matter, I would like to cover the results and the trends of the current year. It's no news that 2019 has become the record one in terms of the exports, the overall supplies under the Gazprom exports and Gazprom Schweiz contracts, according to our management reporting, reached 201.9 billion cubic meters. Without doubt, after such record results have been reached, there's always a question whether we'll be able to sustain such volumes and such a performance. And I would like to draw your attention to the fact that in our industry, trends sometimes are more important than the figures. The precise results of 2019 in the first place shall depend upon the market environment and the weather conditions. But what is truly important is that the fact that our supplies at the level of 200 BCM a year is a new reality in the European gas market. Please note that 10 years ago, the amount of our supplies to the further abroad were about 30% lower. Think about this. This is indeed a huge amount. So the market chooses Gazprom's gas, and the confirmation of it is in our new contracts. Last year, we extended the period of time and increased the amounts of gas supplies to Austria. Recently, at the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum, we signed a new contract for the deliveries to 5G into Germany. Our electronic trading platform that has been operational less than 1 year demonstrates brilliant results, assisting us to sell additional volumes above the long-term contracted volumes. Therefore, at the European market, where currently there is a whole mass of interesting events, we feel ourselves quite certain 2018 has been quite dynamic and unexpected to us. So 2019 promises to become another unique year for the whole industry. We are witnessing an emergence in Europe, large amounts of LNG. We do see that the market is becoming a global one. We note new trends on the side of the demand, as well as the trend back into the power generation on gas, as well as the revitalization of new transport arteries, which will meet the growing demand for gas. And we also should take into account the current political trends, which add a considerable amount of uncertainties to the market environment. Let me not dwell upon the assessment of various activities and political statements. It is important never to forget that Gazprom, first and foremost, is a commercial operator, and our task is to sell the gas upon the terms and conditions which are beneficial to us, to our shareholders, and to our counterparties. And we are capable of selling gas well under any circumstances. Our main strategic objective is to do everything so that more than a half a century history of beneficial, reliable supplies from Russia should continue and should be augmented with new achievements. Let it become the main motto of the work we're going to do within the next few months in this year. Thank you very much, and we will gladly respond to your questions now. Dear colleagues, the question and answer session starts, and we shall work until 10 minutes to 11. Bloomberg, please. Olga Tanas, Bloomberg Agency, with your permission, two questions. Yesterday, the data was released by Gazprom about its exports into the remote abroad. It went down by 5.5% as opposed to the... could you speak up, please, compared to the same period last year, there was a decline of 5.5%. So my question is whether Gazprom is planning to review its plans for exports this year, or will it remain the statistics already given, 204 BCM, as well as my question about the risks related to the transit through Ukraine. Is Gazprom planning to completely fill its underground storage in Europe, and how might that affect prices in autumn?
Thank you very much for your questions. Let me begin with the first one. Yes, indeed, you quite rightly noted the trend in the first quarter this year. There was an insignificant decline, we believe, in the first place, brought about by the weather conditions. Additionally, our supplies to Turkey went down because of the economic environment, which we currently can observe overall on the Turkish market. But notwithstanding, we are looking into the future with a moderate optimism. No, we're not intending to reduce our expectations. As we stated during the press conference in Berlin, the range 194-200 seems to us to be quite an achievable one this year. As always is the case, we shall see what the weather has in store for us, because we had quite a warm winter and autumn last time, and the weather forecast for the forthcoming one may not turn out to be quite a fatal one, so the demand for gas may also grow. Now, the second question was about the risk of the transit and the filling of our underground storage. Yes, we are currently quite actively working in injecting our gas into the European underground storages. Currently, the volumes exceed the levels of last year at about 2.5 times, and so we continue pumping. Moreover, we have chosen to ourselves a strategic development perspective, which calls for at least 5% margin on top of our supplies in the European underground storages, so as to make sure that we stand true to all of our commitments with our European counterparties on a timely basis. We understand that the prices, amongst other things, are gonna be dependent upon the weather conditions, so to be able to precisely predict the price, we can, but that is not quite a negotiating thing to do. Dear colleagues, please, any additional questions, speak into the microphone. Interfax.
Anton Hlychynko, Interfax. Elena Viktorovna, you have mentioned Turkey. There is debate about the economic crisis and pricing. Wouldn't this affect the implementation of the Turkish Strait project and the relationship on the two countries? And based on the results of 2018, didn't the Turkish consumers demonstrate any need to pay an advance payment as a take-or-pay arrangement? And will Gazprom take this into account, considering its results in 2019?
Thank you for your question. First of all, I would like to note that whenever we are talking about such major infrastructure projects as the Turkish Stream, we're not trying to align ourselves with the current market environment, because we went through all kinds of different situations when we were building the Blue Stream. Definitely, similar questions were raised, but as we can see, it has fully paid back. It is working at full capacity. Yes, indeed. Every now and then, different economic situations break out in the market when the share of the supplies either go up or go down. That, amongst other things, is related to the Turkish electricity market, but that won't affect our bilateral relationships at all, which are currently at a very high level. As well as making estimates about the construction and the payback periods for our projects, we put in standard assumptions, which we feel we will be able to completely fulfill. Now, the second question was about the advance payments or take-or-pay arrangements. I can hardly understand your question, to tell you the truth.
I mean, to say that in 2018, the Turkish consumers, didn't they have need to pay an advance payment?
Well, look, let's look at it this way. Any need as such in a contractual arrangement is not an existing notion, because there are terms and conditions that are written into the contract which have been fully complied with, both on the side of the Turkish buyers as well as Gazprom, based on the results of 2018.
Thank you.
And based on the results of 2019, will Gazprom be
insisting upon such terms. Well, we're going through just the middle of 2019. We're not knowledgeable about what kind of situation there may evolve out of it. We don't see what the prices in the market will be. We are seeing that the prices are going down. We may be having to go through the autumn-winter calls, and you know, whatever the price decline there was in Q1, it may really catch up towards the end of the year. Thank you.
Thank you. Artur Toporkov from Vedomosti. Everybody is worried about the problem of 2020 in Ukraine, and I've got several questions to this issue. First of all, within the concept that you are continuing to export gets about 200 BCM to Europe, in the meantime, you don't have the contract to continue transiting through Ukraine, but at the same time, we believe, for example, that the North Stream has been completely built, the South Stream not completely built, and the second string of the Turkish Stream, I mean, is not going to be fully including the European part of it. Which volumes of Ukrainian transit you objectively may require in 2020-2021? This is my first question. All right. Well, as always is the case, you are raising the most exciting question. Nevertheless, let me answer in the following way. I suppose I do understand your concerns about the schedule of having the project commissioned into operation, although I do not share them, because all the work is according to schedule, and we are planning that all of them will be launched on time. There are certain working difficulties, but the ones which are quite manageable right now. So this is the first point. Second point, you mentioned the UGOS, which is the onshore part. I currently do not have any doubt that it's going to be built on time. Everything is according to schedule. Now, Turkish Stream, I mentioned my comments on it. So today I would like to identify individually the kind of volume that may flow by 2020 through the Ukrainian territory. First of all, the transit contract hasn't been signed yet. Secondly, it shall depend upon the demand we see from our European counterparties. And so, basically, approximately understanding the split between the annual volumes that you referred to, in an empirical way, one definitely may come up with some results, but I wouldn't voice these figures just yet. All right, my next question about the Ukrainian transit. It has been mentioned several times that, principally speaking, you are ready to extend the currently existing contract upon the currently existing terms. As far as I remember, the chairman of the board, Alexei Borisovich, mentioned it. The contract in force right now has been spoiled by the Stockholm arbitration resolution, which said that Stockholm believes the volumes written into it as obligatory to pump through. What is a most preferred option in your possible discussions of a further transit? Is it an extension with some adjustments of the currently effective contract, or concluding a new long-term contract, or concluding a short-term contract for 2020-2021 with possible adjustments of the volumes? So what's your position? And has it been already proposed in this or that way during the meetings by way of a commercial offer to the Ukrainian part, or there are no substantive negotiations currently underway? Thank you for your question. Well, the Ukrainian transit, without doubt, is somewhat of a difficult topic right now. As you may be aware, there have been a number of meetings in the form of consultations starting from July 2017 until January 2019. Trilateral one, the European Commission, Ukrainian parties, as well as us, attended. No substantive agreements so far have been reached, as you may know, and we do understand that at this point in time, there is quite a complex political situation in the Ukraine right now. We understand that the cabinet has to be appointed. Changes should take place in the parliament, and I suppose after that we shall revisit this issue, because right now money, and there's no secret basically to anyone, I mean, we don't understand who we can talk to. You know, who are the people, who are the entities that we should negotiate with? I hope Sergei Ivanovich will add on, because he's deeply immersed in this issue. Yes, sir, thank you very much, Elena Viktorovna. with respect, we have been many times called upon to enter into a contract upon the European terms and conditions, but this, I believe, is not possible right now, because there aren't any institutions in Ukraine which could fully perform the kind of functions which, as we traditionally working in Europe, should expect from such institutions, such as regulators and transport operators. I think it was just last week, on June 5th, the Ukrainian government decree was released, which at least, you know, clarifies and identifies certain pace in terms of where we should go. Because before that, there's been continuous disputes between the Naftogaz of Ukraine, the cabinet of ministers, what kind of operatorship model should be selected, what should be the principles upon which they should organize themselves further. But without understanding who's going to be your counterparty, it is very difficult what kind of prerequisites and what kind of assumptions one may have with respect to the future contracting. It may even be worthwhile adding here, because it was exactly yesterday we had a discussion about the European report. Yes, Mrs. Burmistrova is making reference to the following thing. As is known, Ukraine is a member of the energy community, and it has taken upon itself certain commitments to introduce the third package rules and following the European principles in its legislation. So, based on the information available to us, and this is the report published upon the website of the Energy Community Secretariat, it was released in 2018, I should admit right now that to a certain extent it is outdated, but at least what it says here is that the basic institutions which are important for the capacity contractor, regulator and transport operator are not in a satisfactory condition yet. And it mentions here that the regulator, which defines the key economics of transit, meaning the estimation of a tariff, until now is not an independent entity, as it should be, based on the European principles. A regulator has to also be independent, so that nobody could have a doubt that it is being guided by exclusively objective criteria when defining the amount of transit, rather than any other considerations. So based on that, we are looking forward to see some progress, and not to occupy the microphone, I would raise another question. Many people are talking about the Ukrainian transit, and very few are remembering the Polish transit. Your contract expires next year. Are there any negotiations currently going on, if at all? If it is not about extending the current contract, what kind of indicators within it may change once you restart the process? Yes, it is true that negotiations currently are continuing, and moreover, since they have been further strengthened by the intergovernmental agreements, there are different government agencies on the Polish side are being involved in it, as well as the Ministry of Energy on the Russian side. There aren't results just yet, so whenever they are, we will inform you about it. Andrei Gryaznov, ITAR-TASS news agency. Irene Viktorovna, I've got the following question. Gazprom is developing a plan to minimize the negative outcomes because of the Danish position with respect to the Nord Stream. Yes, they're trying to delay it. Is there any deadline following which it will be clear that the project won't be commissioned towards the end of 2019 without the permitting being given by Denmark? Thank you. Well, you know, what I'm remembering hearing this is a quote from the Garage movie, that it is possible to move in the legal way, but very difficult. And the same case is here. We've been following the legal path very obediently. We've submitted three applications. Soon there's going to be a consultation between the project company and the Danish Energy Agency. So in the meantime, I would avoid, you know, saying anything negative and talk about any point of no return, because the construction is progressing according to schedule based on June 2019. 68% of the project has been built, which is 1,441 kilometers in length. So we are moving, I should say, at a very energetic pace, more energetic than originally anticipated. So what is remaining, I question, is just the piece of the Danish territory at about 130 kilometers. Alexei Miller, as part at the forum, as well as in the recesses, used to say that depending upon the weather condition, we can build it within 5 weeks, maybe even shorter. So currently we do not see it as a problem. Maybe my colleagues would like to add something. I would only like to draw your attention that the Nord Stream company came out with a comment on this issue itself and draw the attention to the need to provide for the protection of the investor rights since it had made certain investments. And so the company is looking forward to the Danish authorities to consider the situation without any bias. And when the date for the start of the supplies of gas through the Turkish stream is going to be defined, I don't think this is a secret because we've already announced this information. It's going to be the end of 2019. Thank you. Colleagues, thank you very much. Now let's switch over to the Moscow pool of correspondents. Good afternoon. So the first question, Vitaly Sokolov, please don't do more than two questions per correspondent because unfortunately we don't have too much time today. All right, thank you very much. Well, in this case, I shall ask a question about pricing and your spot market tactics in Europe. You've already mentioned that prices are difficult to forecast, but against the current very low prices, are you not planning to reduce your sales in the spot, including through the electronic trading platform, so that to somehow perk these prices up? Or you find the situation comfortable and maybe you believe that this is the kind of situation whereby you are much better off in it compared to the US LNG? Well, yeah, in the meantime, that's it. Thank you. Very well. If one is to take a closer look at the current European gas market, we haven't noticed that the Gazprom's gas would be trying to compare itself with American LNG. We're not competing for the same set of niches. In as far as the electronic trading platform volumes are concerned, we're not intending to reduce the volume because we believe the situation to be quite comfortable to us, despite the fact that the prices are nudging down. But we understand that, amongst other things, that would create a positive effect upon the electricity sector, as well as the consumption of gas for the production of power. This is first thing. Second, well, basically speaking, the market has already responded to us not restricting our supplies without us trying to manipulate the market, being 100% committed to what we've obliged to do. Amongst other things, the kind of prices that we can observe today reflect our export policy. So it seems to me that the market has already took this into account. Currently, there is an injection going on into the underground storages, and not only Gazprom is busy doing it, but many European companies as well. Therefore, we do not anticipate any reduction at this point in time. Thank you, Ludmila Paravedova. Good afternoon. Recently, our Minister of Energy, Alexander Novak, said that Gazprom proposed to Ukraine a out-of-court settlement in as far as the Stockholm arbitration is concerned. Could you raise the veil? What's true? Because Naftogaz didn't agree that they have accepted it. And my second question, have you counted the amount of fines that the Stockholm arbitration ruled for? I mean, that there's a penalty accrued that we're not paying 110 billion that Stockholm ruled for. Thank you. Ludmila, thank you very much for your question. I will try and do my best to answer it. And as far as the out-of-court settlement is concerned, yes, that was the kind of proposal which was made.
In the past, January 2019, during the trilateral consultations, Mr. Miller said it, that we were ready to consider the zero option and go back to the negotiations from blank page. But the Ukrainian side, the fact of the matter is that they're very insistent on trying to change the contents of such and out-of-court settlements and saying that the kind of the ruling, let's just keep it as it is because it's in our favor. But in terms of our future demands, let's give up on that and on that basis enter into the out-of-court settlement. That reminds me about the Winnie the Pooh jokes that said that we received a parcel with 10 oranges, 8 of which I have already eaten. Well, if we got something to discuss, we would be more than happy to discuss it. But so far, there's nothing really transforming itself into a worthy discussion. And what was the second question? Could you repeat it? Have you counted? Oh, the penalties, yes. How much you have to pay? Yes. Well, first of all, at the Naftogaz website, there is a very nice counter, which so scrupulously is counting up the kind of penalty that we're supposed to pay them. So we are gratefully using the help of our colleagues. And there is also information that they have already received more than $2 billion from Gazprom as a penalty, which is not really true, because they definitely bear in mind the kind of the amount that Stockholm arbitration ruled for based on the results of the two hearings. Not a single dollar, not a single euro have been paid, and all of the seizures of the property has been terminated and suspended. So that only points to the validity of our proposal to reach an out-of-court settlement, because even the representatives of the European Commission are the ones that the Ukrainian counterparties are, not telling the truth to. And they're saying that there's nothing to discuss with the Russians because it's a proven thing, it's a sure bet, and they will get what they want. But as they say, one should rather. And one little addition, Elena Viktorovna said that you are waiting for the change of the government and the parliament. Are you waiting for the change of the Naftogaz leadership and the current leadership? Is it an obstacle in your ability to communicate on merit? Well, dear colleagues, I wouldn't pronounce such assessment to our colleagues from Naftogaz. Yes, but Miller, it's totally not correct to try and say what you are saying as a correspondent, but based on the regulatory principles and the way the European gas market operates, one of the critical things that we're currently hearing both from the European Commission as well as the energy community, that so far there hasn't been any separation. Naftogaz continues to combine the functions and operates both as a trader in the wholesale gas market, as well as controls the Ukrtransgaz, which is the transit operator. So unbundling this in order to achieve the unbiasedness is still the kind of distortions that we do see without this being resolved. Thank you, Anastasia Kudryashova, Russia Today. I have a question about the Nord Stream 2. Again, Alexander Novak, the Russian Minister of Energy, recently said that there are several options by which this particular project can be adjusted to the European Gas Directive. Could you please describe what kind of options there are? Which ones do you consider? And my second question is, I don't know whether it's on the subject matter, is about your negotiations with Turkmenistan. What are the volumes of acquisitions of the Turkmenian gas you expect to achieve, and when one can expect negotiations to start? All right, let's begin with your first question. Yes, indeed, a number of statements have been made following the meeting with Mr. Shevchevich by Alexander Novak, but effectively, what are the plan A and plan B? First of all, the directive hasn't yet been implemented, and it'll take some time. I believe it may take up to 9 months in duration. So it seems to me that it's premature to discuss it. Sergei Ivanovich, would you add something? Yes, of course.
The way it will work, we understand, only after the norms of amendments into the third package are going to be introduced in the legislation of Germany, which is currently is the host and the recipient of the project. So first the process has to start, then changes has to be made into the German legislation. Various explanations should be given to the German regulators, and only then we will understand whether we need any adjustments and in which form. So it's too soon to talk about it. Now, going back to your second question, I think we've discussed them as part of our Eastern press conference. Let me repeat it anyway. Yes, indeed. At this point in time, we have a short-term contract in place with the Turkmenian side, which is going to expire in the end of the current month. And so we're currently actively negotiating a mid-term contract for the forthcoming year. I mean, without doubt, to just quote the prices and the volumes, I shall not, until negotiations are not over, because we usually do not disclose such a commercially sensitive information. Yes, thank you very much. Anastasia Gudova, Rus Media. Yes, good afternoon. Could you please tell us, now, bearing in mind the fact and consider the optimistic option that the Nord Stream is going to be built, and on both sides, on all sides, how much gas this forthcoming winter or this year you're planning to, you know, supply through the Nord Stream, and how much gas this winter through the Turkish Stream? So this is my first question: how much gas through the Nord Stream? How much gas through the Turkish Stream? I mean, into Europe. And my second question: you are saying it yourself, there's a whole bunch of you know, problems to come to an agreement with Ukraine. There's no government. There's no nothing. Now, what are the measures that you are planning in order for there not to be any crisis in the winter of the forthcoming year? I mean, the fact that there's going to be maximum injection down into underground storage, all right, we understand it, but what else? So, two questions from me. Well, as far as your first question is concerned, I effectively have given already a partial answer to it, because it shall depend upon the applications we receive from our European off-takers. And so based on that, once we approach the autumn-winter period, we will be in a position to forecast a more precise balance, as well as a split in between different corridors. Now, in terms of the second question, what kind of measures we undertake? I've already listed the main ones. First of all, we believe that there are the options that we have mentioned here. Two streams, on top of it, an ability to reach an agreement with the Ukrainian side to extend the currently effective transit contract. So, we would like to avoid trying to believe into any apocalyptic scenario. I don't think there will be anything else that I can add to it. But in the form of LNG, are you planning to sell it? I mean, do you at all consider this as an option? Are you having any negotiations? I mean, understandably, that one would like not to, you know, believe into a bad option, but what if something happens? One should be on the safe side. So maybe in the form of LNG to try and make the most out of the regas terminals in Europe, or maybe use the currently existing infrastructure in order to supply it, any optionalities. All right, by order of an appearance, I do not really understand to try and make the most out of the European regas capacities. The Europeans should think about it rather than us. We should rather think about our own strategy. And our strategy is to meet the needs of our consumers in full. And that is what we are thinking about. Without doubt, we're going to continue to supply LNG exactly as we're doing it today. Ludmila Potapitova again. Well, you were saying about extending or concluding a new contract, and extending or entering into a new contract for which period of time currently, you mean? Ludmila, I said extending the currently new contract. It was you who mentioned entering the new contract, just to be
100% correct. You know, we are very flexible in our approaches. We may be quite content with the mid-term and short-term contracts. We are ready to discuss any options as soon as we understand who with. But my colleagues, you know, I am very attentively listening to your questions, and I am interested in the following thing. Why not a single person is asking questions? What about gas supplies to Ukraine starting from 2020? I mean, we are existing in somewhat a disbalanced paradigm. I mean, we have commitments, you know, to Ukraine as such, but the question is whether Ukraine is interested. And there have been a number of statements made by Alexei Miller, who is the chairman of the board of Gazprom, at the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum, about the readiness on the part of Gazprom to supply gas to the end users in Ukraine at the price which is 25% below the current market price. Now, what is actually happening now? Our Ukrainian buyers, they're buying the very same Russian gas which is delivered to Ukraine through the reverse system at the price which is significantly higher than the prices Ukrainians would have gotten in our contract, direct contract, and everybody is satisfied with that. In order for us to achieve a well-balanced situation in our volumes through all the corridors, actually responding to a previous question, we need to understand what kind of capacities are going to be required, what kind of a technical pressure, what kind of a throughput capacity we on the Russian side should maintain with respect to the Ukrainian corridor. For that purpose, we need to understand whether we're going to sell gas or not, or will Ukraine be buying it from some third parties at much higher prices. And this calls for a very complex approach. In order to be able to estimate all of these figures, we as a minimum need to enjoy some sort of an adequate attitude from our counterparties. And here we do hope that that is part of the Ukrainian interests, that Ukraine is interested in further extending the transit arrangement as well as growing the consumption volumes at much more economically attractive prices. Thank you very much. We are switching back to St. Petersburg. Vedomosti newspaper, please. Thank you. Oh, my voice is playing up. Now, about Ukrainian supplies. Starting from 2020, the question of a political will and economic prerequisites of the counterpart in Ukraine. My question is, Naftogaz has switched on the counter on its website, as well as the Stockholm arbitration ruling, presupposes that even if it's 10 times less, but Ukraine is supposed to buy gas from Gazprom up to 5 billion cubic meters, just, you know, whatever. Are you making any sort of a calculation on your part in terms of what they're not really doing in terms of to remain compliant with the Stockholm arbitration? Well, we didn't put up any counter on our website because we believe our company is not a counter producer, but we're a gas producer. But as far as fines and penalties are concerned, I would ask my colleagues to comment. Yes, it really wouldn't be difficult to really sit down and count everything up. But we've always been for a constructive cooperation. But to try and scare each other with all kinds of counters, I mean, it's a path into nowhere. Everybody knows what they're entitled to legally, so we'll be in a position to protect our interested court. I've got another question. You were talking about Denmark. I do understand that to a larger extent this is a question to the Nord Stream AG company, but maybe you being a stakeholder, you may possibly know. Why do you need to pass through Denmark, Germany and Sweden have a certain juncture where the free economic zones join each other? Do you consider to extend the length of the Nord Stream 2 but bypass Denmark completely? Well, you see, well, first of all, when an application was submitted to follow the first route, the Nord Stream 2 company was acting in accordance with the previously bitten path in the case of the Nord Stream 1. So following a simple rationale, one could definitely imagine that air permission would have been granted painlessly. But following that, you are aware of the whole story. Let me not repeat it again, because there was a second application submitted, then the third one. So the applications for the second and the third options of the routing of the Nord Stream 2 fall through the exclusive economic zone. And in this case, Denmark, we believe, from the point of view of the Nord Stream 2, cannot but issue the permit, because otherwise that would be a violation of the UN Convention. Sergei Ivanovich will help me to comment on this legally. Yes, you probably do know about the Nord Stream 2 company comments, and I do agree with what they're saying, that Denmark has either the possibility to issue permission or not issue permission, but it doesn't have the right, it is not entitled to specify where the route should pass. And I do agree with Elena Burmistra, the rationale in the first of following the pass of the Nord Stream 1 was quite logical. Yes, I understand it, but they're not limited in time in, you know, considering your application. Yes, I do understand what you mean by a question, but there is a certain accountability that sooner or later may arise. As far as I know, Nord Stream company has already hinted at the fact that the investments have already been made, and so any delay in issuing the requested permitting for the construction of the pipeline may transform into the kind of damage that sooner or later will have to be compensated for. May I ask another question, please? Yes, a short one, please. Anybody has another question? Yes, please. I've got one. Yes, so one and one. Right, and we shall wrap up. Your contract for the acquisition of 2.5 million tons of LNG from Yamal LNG, a long-term contract, I think it was reconsidered. Which share of this LNG is currently being supplied to India? You know, completely not so, I mean, the one that is your portfolio share from that project. Honestly speaking, it is difficult for me to itemize this, but the contract had direct supplies to India and possible, you know, swap operations at the Zeebrugge port. So we will be able to respond to it offline if you can accept this question. In the Victor, is Gazprom interested in the acquisition of private Turkish importers? So in whose favor the arbitration ruling happened with them? If it's not in your favor, then how much are you supposed to pay, and for which period of time? Yes, indeed. Throughout the last year and the current year, we had a number of arbitration hearings, and with respect to all five cases, the ruling was issued in our favor. Those were different arbitration tribunals. The amounts payable do represent a sensitive commercial information, and we do take this into account with our relationship with counterparties, and that is my answer to your second question. But as far as your first question is concerned, no, we're currently not considering any future acquisition of the companies you mentioned. Thank you. Tax agency, final question. Very short question, just could you be more specific? You said that towards the end of the year you will identify the deadline for the start of the supply. So when is that? December, thank you. And another question. This year, the start of the supplies through the power of Siberia is going to begin. When one should expect the signing of the contract for the supplies to China from the Far East, and what is the reason for such a very lengthy negotiations? Sorry, this question is not about the subject matter of today's press conference. Did you miss? Well, all right, then my very last question, if I may, please. All right, so let me do this one. Because of a low demand for the injection of the gas into the European underground storages, will Gazprom be in a position to repeat the export record of the last year, 200 billion cubic meters? Well, I apologize. I think we've mentioned this particular topic, you know, more than once from different angles. I identified the ranges as well as our targets. Thank you. Thank you very much. And so, everyone, very thank you. Can I just one little specific thing? Your data is for 31st of 12, 2018, in terms of the European underground storage usage. You are pumping down, you know, more than two times. So what is going to be the guidance in terms of the daily daily takeoff from them? It's a very good question, but it's impossible to give a straightforward answer because there is no guidances like that. I mean, there are such, but
With them, you have a very detailed itemizations month per month, date per day, as well as the, you know, daily peaks. So the averages won't really help. And the indicators are so different, and the profile of the takeoff very strongly depends upon when it started. Was it the Q4 of the last year, or was it, you know, in January or February? So there are no absolute indicators. It develops in a very dynamic way, but our experts are modeling very diverse scenarios, and we do all of our estimates based on such scenarios. And then, as far as I understand, the underground storage capacity is the public information that you may find on the website of the operators per every underground storage. It is indeed so individual. In every particular case, it depends upon whether, you know, the capacity has been fully committed or it is, you know, not continuous. Yes, thank you very much for very interesting questions. We really enjoyed meeting you today. Yes, thank you very much. The next press conference is going to be on June 21st. 2:30 p.m. about financial policy. Thank you.